Hey, Andrew.
Yes, Ryan.
I really want to talk about Resident Evil in this podcast, but we got to be really careful because every time I start, oh, yes.
Are you scared or aroused?
Welcome back to the Explosion of Happiness podcast, episode number 63. It is February 9th, 2017. It is time to be happy and talk about video games. I am your host, Ryan.
And I am your other host, Andrew, and in this weekly podcast, I talk about video game while Ryan talks about video games. And I sit there and pretend to listen and act interested in what he has to say and just say yeah a lot.
You're probably going to do that a lot. This is actually more like the Ryan cast this week since I played like fucking four games in the last 2 weeks.
And I haven't played any because I've been in the middle of a move.
You played Tetris.
Did I play Tetris this last week?
Yeah, you played Tetris.
I did.
You played real life Tetris.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you're right. Actually, I did.
How was Tetris?
Putting everything in isn't that bad. Taking everything out isn't that bad. The bad part is, where the fuck did I put... Okay, I know I have these, like, AC cords, you know, like, hook up your computer or your monitor or your televisions. I put them all, like, in one bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow during the... Like, I swear to God, I put them all in one bag. Like, I firmly believe I put them all in one bag. And then we get there, and, like, they're not in the bag. I thought I put them in the bag with all the other cords. And there's, like, a struggle to find all these fucking AC cords so I can hook up two televisions and two computers and three monitors. And I'm, like, throwing everything everywhere. And then I find all the power cords I need, get everything hooked up. And now that I don't need them anymore, I found like three more of these fucking AC power cords. And it's like, okay. Because I just hold on to them for work. Because I can't, they're so universal and everything fucking uses them. In my brain, I'm like, what if I need one day? So I just hold on to these.
When I'm moving, I always try to keep every cord I need directly for this thing together with that thing in the same box so that I always know what it is. And when I have to put a cord in a different box, I always label it. In fact, I do have, like you, a box just full of random shit, and I just call it my random shit box. It's just a bunch of random cords. And every now and then, I'll try to hook up, like, an old TV or something and be like, I need some kind of cord for this. I have no fucking idea if I do, and I'll open up that container, and then if I'm lucky, it'll be in there.
Right. And I do the same thing. Like, I have a ton of HDMI of varying lengths just in case I need a short HDMI, just in case I need a long HDMI.
It just got a little more complicated for me because so since I use my DualShock 4 with my PC, I needed a cord that would reach across my living room, and the one that comes with the PS4 isn't long enough. So I bought these two 15-inch DualShock 4 charging cables, which work with the PS4, but they don't work with the PC, though, because apparently they don't have data transfer. That's like a really small detail you had to look for when you're buying these things off Amazon. They don't always make it really obvious. So I had to buy multiple cords until I found one that actually worked, and now I just got this giant box of cords, and only some of them work the way I want. And they all look the same, so I haven't even figured out how I'm going to store these. I'm just going to need to get tons and tons of bags.
What you should do is get a zip tie, if you can. Multicolored zip ties?
That takes effort.
At least two zip ties of the same color, and zip tie the non-data transfer cable.
Or I could just throw them away. In the back of my mind, I'm never going to get myself to be able to throw these things away, because that small part of me is going to say, you might need these someday, though.
I hate that voice so much.
It's
fucking... That voice! Like, you're going to regret this.
It goes all the way back to our prehistoric human nature to gather and survive, and you just can't get rid of shit you don't need anymore. Fuck. I think it's probably why I will never let myself buy actual, like, physical porn, because I don't know why I picked this example of them, but I know as soon as I get, like, some kind of iconic porn from a time period, I'm going to want to preserve it. It's going to be like the most important piece of history ever to me. And it'll be like, but now I have kids. I don't know what I'm going to do with this shit. I can't just like keep it lying around because someone's going to find it. But I could never willfully get myself to throw it away. I'd have to like bury it in some treasure chest out in the middle of nowhere and have like a big treasure hunt breadcrumb trail set up for people to go find it someday. That'd actually be kind of fun.
Okay, I need it.
Let's save up $1,000, buy a ton of hentai from Japan, and then put it in a box and bury it in the middle of a desert.
Oh,
and then leave it for our kids to find something.
Exactly. And just, like, leave a note that says, if you are a 12-year-old male, jackpot.
And you know what? If, like, someday fucking some globalist takeover happens and porn becomes illegal, then it could be the thing that the resistance looks for, the treasure chest of Ryan and Andrew.
That'd be so awesome. Okay.
That could be an Uncharted 5.
Related to the move, something I really wanted to talk about on this podcast is we needed internet.
Everyone needs internet. You're not some kind of barbarian living in the dark age.
Exactly.
Internet is life.
We checked a few providers, and we soon came to the realization we had one choice and one choice only, and that's Comcast. And as I'm sure most people know, fuck Comcast.
You do have the choice of killing yourself. You always have that choice. Never forget.
Comcast really does make you want to do that. Anyway, so I signed up for Comcast. I do it all online. It's inconvenient. They even gave me the option, which was really nice, of using my own router, which I have, so I didn't have to pay the stupid rental fee. Gladly took that one up, because, yeah, why the fuck? Don't use the router. Just don't. Well, after I did that, then they had to send me, like, the setup kit, is what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
It cost $15 to buy this setup kit. And
yep.
Then another $15 to ship it, or $30 if I want it expedited. I was like, well, this move kind of happened a lot more sudden than I thought, so I don't have time to get, you know, regular shipping. And I'm a fucking nerd that's going to die of starvation if I don't have internet. So I chose expedited so I could get it here the next day. So I paid $45 for this startup kit. Now remember, I have my own router. And I have my own Cat5 cables. Open up the starter kit. It's a pamphlet with instructions, like one sheet of paper on both sides. That's it. It's a coaxial cable splitter, a coaxial cable, and then these like little zip tie things so I can hide the cable or like set it, like have it go around my walls and shit. I'm just like looking at this. I'm like, I paid $45 to get next day shipping on a fucking coaxial cable. I hate so much Comcast. Like, all just out the gate, they're just like, hey, buddy, you're going to need this. I'm like, oh, what is it? Oh, it's our fist up your ass.
How strange. They didn't want to just go out of their way and say, by the way, this is all it is. You could convenience yourself by going out and buying it. Go figure. Like, but wait, if you bought it expedited, the money didn't even go to them. That went to the shipper, didn't it?
I guess. So UPS got an extra $15 to ship a fucking coaxial. Like, it weighs like 2 pounds max. The entire thing. Just, fuck you guys. I hate you.
I've been through that shit multiple times. I've lived in so many apartments and had multiple different kinds of internet providers. My current one, Frontier, you know how they did it? I called them up and said, hey, can I have internet? And they were like, yeah, okay. And they showed up the same day, installed it, and didn't charge me extra for anything.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing that really blows my mind. Do you know what it would have cost to schedule an appointment with, you know, Comcast? So not even necessarily the same day.
Wait, you had to pay just to get an appointment?
Yeah, you have to pay $90 for an appointment.
Wait, did I have, like, someone come to your place?
No, I didn't pick that option. I picked the self-setup option. But say, like,
But that's just for, like, have a person installed for you. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's for a person to come out here with a coaxial cable, put the coaxial cable into my fucking neck.
That's so fucked up. Hey, you know, normally when you pay monthly fees to your internet service, that kind of goes towards that.
It is. It's super. And I feel like this is taking advantage of people who are, like, technology illiterate, which is especially older people, or people who just don't find that stuff interesting but still want internet for their fucking cell phones. It's like, way to go, Comcast. You're just screwing people left and right, and you don't give a fuck, and they never give a fuck, and they'll never give a fuck.
Did you hear that they're about to start their own mobile network, like cell phones?
Ugh.
You must really have to hate yourself to go use it, unless they plan to somehow take over an area and force you to use them.
Yeah, that's my worry, is like, because they do a lot of bullshit government crap and fucking People United or whatever that's called.
I still find it amazing that we live in a really tech literate area of Washington near Seattle with all these huge
Amazon,
IT industries.
Comcast
but Comcast still has so much of a
Amazon, Microsoft, Nintendo of America. I mean, these are all like huge names that are in this area.
And yet Comcast still controls most of it themselves. It's
so fucked up.
Yeah.
One more thing before we start talking about video games. It'll be quick, but I think you'll appreciate it. And it's for once, it's not a naked lady.
I'm really surprised it's not. Is it a naked man?
Yep.
Are you serious?
It's a half-naked man, yes.
Okay, well.
Look it, you'll love it.
It's loading up. Higher quality Terry Crews rave gif. It's Terry Crews with a... Is that a pacifier or a whistle?
Pacifier.
It's a pacifier. Mm-hmm. Normally, when I see people with pacifiers in their mouths at a rave, I just assume they got to be the biggest piece of shit in the fucking world.
You know why they do that, right? It's so when you're rolling on E, you don't bite your own tongue and shit.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
And because when you're rolling, well, not just biting your own tongue, but when you're rolling on E, you kind of get an oral fixation. So it's like,
how are there not women just like all over him right now? Like, how is he not just being fucking like?
No, like I know that's my first thought too, which makes me think. I don't know if this is actually at a real rave or if this is a, like a set shoot or something.
Yeah, that's what I would think. It looks kind of staged.
Like, how the fuck is like that one chick?
There's no way this is real. These people don't look like they're like actually at a rave. They look like they're just.
Because if this is real, one of those women would be like right up on his crotch, just.
Yes. Yeah. Like I would be right on his crotch grinding. I'm just saying.
There's three thirsty ass bitches.
I know. They look just totally like in their own world right now. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, Terrence Crews is awesome.
Yeah, he is.
All right. So I guess that means we should do what we set out to do when we made this podcast.
It's not too late to change that original proposition.
You know, if we made this podcast talking about pornography, we'd probably stop talking about pornography.
We've already made that point before. I'm just trying to think we should just rename this The Explosion of Life. Because that's really what this is all about in the end, getting by life.
It's about making each day as enjoyable as you can so that you really don't notice time passing. And then when you die, you're like, I lived.
I know. It's kind of starting to cause some personal problems for me because I listen to so many of our older episodes constantly on repeat because I'm trying to self-improve my charisma or just my ability to be creative and whatever the fuck else, better word usage, whatever fuck. But I've listened to myself talk so much now that I have such a fucking passionate hatred for my own voice that I really wish we had enough listeners that could honestly tell me, is my voice super fucking grating? Am I just a fucking chore to listen to? Do I sound like as big of a douchebag as I think I sound like? Even when I try to speak deeper with more bass, I still sound like a gravelly cigar-smoking dickhead.
Yes, you do sound like a gravelly cigar-smoking dickhead, but I don't think your voice is unenjoyable.
My wife.
You hate your
voice. I know. Everyone hates their own voice. That's the thing, though, is it's like, but sometimes people really do have really shitty voices, and I can't tell if mine is one of them or not.
I don't think it is.
Because I think it's when I get really angry and start shouting about things. That's what I'm trying to tell myself not to do anymore. It's kind of hard. Like, when you get passionately angry and start yelling about video games, it's kind of hard to, okay, my friend is currently texting me saying, For Honor open beta starts today. No sign up. Okay, I already tried to sign up for that just to play the game with him, and I really don't want to actually play the game. That's how I got roped into Battlefield. I don't want to go down that road again. Do you give a shit about For Honor? When you explained it to me, I started to care.
I want to play For Honor. It looks like it's fun. I don't want to spend $60 on For Honor.
Like, For Honor is a game that maybe I'll pick up when it's like $13 on discount someday and play for a day or two.
For Honor is the kind of game that's like, for $60, I pay that if I could get like four copies and give it to friends. Because it looks like it'd be a fucking blast to play online with people. But just like the single player campaign, no.
As it stands, I'm trying to keep my PC as DRM free as I can. And I'm not saying I don't ever use DRM. I'm just saying I'm trying to. I don't want Uplay on my computer. I have no attachment to any Ubisoft IP that demands I keep Uplay installed on my computer. I want to keep it that way. But if I get this game and I end up liking it, then I'll have to keep Uplay installed. It's the same reason I want to play Rainbow Six Siege. I'm sure these are good games. I just don't want more shit on my computer that I need to keep.
I would totally get For Honor for the PlayStation.
If it had split screen, I would.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of the reason why I don't want to get any.
Hello, yeah.
It's because they took that out. It's like, if it had split screen for $60, I'd probably get it on the PlayStation because I could bring it over to my friend's house because all my friends have PlayStation 4.
You'd have to wait like fucking 4 hours to install it.
That's true.
Don't forget that part.
You're right. I always forget that. So I'd just like give it to them the day before. I'd be like, I'm coming over. Install this shit on your PlayStation.
It's a good thing I'm an adult now. I would hate being a kid but getting video games a generation and having to wait hours and hours for the games to install because whenever I buy a game for my PS4 or anything really, Steam, I just plan the night ahead of time, like, okay, this is going to be the install night. I'm going to make a bag of popcorn and watch the loading bar go up.
Yeah, a great advice that I hear is given a lot to parents is if you buy your kid like an Xbox or PlayStation 4 for Christmas or their birthday, take it out of the box, do all the update installs like 2 days before or something, like install the games that you bought them if necessary. And then you give it to them the next day. That way they only have to do 3 hours of updates instead of 6 hours of installs and updates.
Yeah, I know. so much of this is frustrating, even for really tech literate people like us. I can't imagine what it's like to be a parent who doesn't really know a lot about video games, and then their kid gets one of these systems and like, "Mommy, Daddy, it's not working. It says I need to have this or that."
That is like a personal hell I didn't even know exists, and I'll never be able to experience it. But that must be the most fucking frustrating thing in the world.
It's got to be even worse for, like, I know GameStop is pure fucking evil, but I feel kind of bad for some of the employees there who have to deal with people who have no idea what the fuck they're doing when they buy things, and then they call in, like, "This game is fucking defective. It says I require PlayStation Plus or something. What the fuck is that?" And I don't know. I feel like, despite technology having advanced as far as it has, just being able to play video games has gotten more complicated than it's ever needed to be.
It's something that I talk about all the time. Probably brought it up on this podcast 4 times already. I really miss the Super Nintendo days of you slap that bitch in that bitch. You push the little purple thing forward. And then fucking just Super Mario pops up. There's no Nintendo made by, you know, fucking 3 little splash screens. You know, all that shit started with the PlayStation.
Yeah.
N64, all that. No, it's just fucking that like Ocarina of Time music just starts playing. And you see the word Zelda. And you're just like, play or load game. There's not sitting through shit. There's not updates. There's not installing. There's just game.
Yep.
Speaking of game.
Speaking of shit, video games. Right, not really. That's.
Yeah, I think we have 3 rather positive games.
3.
Finishing thoughts on Last of Us, I believe, right?
I guess I could get that out of the way.
And I'll take my headset off and you can talk about Resident Evil 7.
No, you have to listen, because I have to make you want to play it more. And I swear...
I already really want to play it.
Hey, I've had to listen to you jack off Bloodborne for like the last fucking year and a half, so you're going to hear me talking about Resident Evil until you start playing that. So yeah, The Last of Us, I picked that up last week and started playing through it, and I could go into details, but the game is old enough at this point. I don't really feel like I need to. Everything has pretty much been said on both sides. Both people love the game and hated the game. I liked it. I think it's a good 7 out of 10, maybe a 6. It depends on what aspects of it you focused on the most. I thought early on the story takes a while to get going, and there's some really obvious virtue signaling going on with some of the characters that they wrote. But as the story goes on, it actually gets pretty gripping and emotional, and it's really one of those, you know, kind of story-driven roller coaster ride games. The gameplay is just there to kind of accommodate the story. And once you play through the game once, there's not a lot of incentive to go back. I never tried the multiplayer. I probably will someday because I actually heard it wasn't that bad. Gameplay-wise, there's lots of different ways you could categorize it. I define it as a survival game that's half stealth, half action. And if you look at it just for that part of it, just the gameplay part, the game is kind of shit because the AI is some of the worst I have ever fucking seen in a AAA video game. And for how much this game got jerked off by critics and raved and declared by certain idiots that it deserves a whole new category of, how do they say it? There were people saying that The Last of Us is something so spectacular. It needs its own categorizations. Video game is not good enough for The Last of Us. It needs something new to define it. And that's just...
interactive art piece.
Yeah, it's just fucking outrageous. I can't believe people actually got that into it. But I kind of know why they say that. It's because it is a really well-told story. And as you're playing it, it puts you in the universe really well and makes you feel really attached to Joe and Ellie. But, God, yeah, the AI is just so fucking bad. Like, the enemies will get stuck on walls and stuff. They'll occasionally just start running around in circles, absurdly random things that don't make any sense, run off in random directions. There was one moment where I nail-bombed 3 guys standing in a huddle, and this guy in the fucking room, like, right next to him was just staring out of space as the 3 of them were screaming and dying and, like, explosions were going off. And just things that, like, if you look at it as a stealth game, it's fucking, it's just bad. Straight up bad. But, you know, if you look at it as, you know, it's a narrative-driven experience, then yes, you're playing as this man who's trying to survive and get through all these obstacles with this girl, and they're struggling, and yeah, you know. If I keep talking about this, I'll just start rambling, so I'll try to tie it up. I liked The Last of Us more than I thought it would. For a game that's been masturbated so fucking hard, I kind of expected to go the other way, like Bioshock Infinite, and just end up hating it. But unlike Bioshock Infinite, The Last of Us actually has a good story. It has really good things going for it. It's not entirely perfect. There's weak elements to it. It felt like half the game had an astonishing amount of attention to detail. Certain homes you go in felt very distinctive from every other place. And then there are other times you go into homes and you see the same photos that you've already seen in other homes before. So it's like they kind of just picked and choose what parts of the game they paid a lot of time developing. And then other parts, like the actual enemy AI, just seemed like it was completely overlooked and they didn't put a lot of time trying to make that as good as it could be. Not a great game, arguably. Maybe a good game if you're just really, really into the story and that whole experience. But that's about it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I put it away. Probably never going to play it again. But I liked it enough that for the $13 I bought it for, I think it was worth it. Recommendable, I guess. Definitely not something worth masturbating over. Also, definitely not super fucking awful terrible like some people want to say. But, you know, that's all I have to say on The Last of Us.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's like, you know, Undertale. If Undertale was actually, you know, had a good story, great graphics, actually had good level design, likable characters.
Yeah.
That aren't just fur traps.
There was a moment, a predicament at the end where you're in a very, Joel's in a very fucked up situation, and the final climax of the game kind of presents like a greater good dilemma. Are you actually doing the right thing? Are you actually doing the wrong thing? And to me, the situation presented itself in such a way that I thought it was like unconditionally, unarguably, definitely the right thing that Joel was doing at the end. And there's this one part where you walk in on these three doctors about to do something so ethically inconceivably awful that I don't think I've ever taken so much pleasure in just ruthlessly slaughtering three unarmed people in a video game before.
That kind of makes me want to play the game.
Yes, that's the one thing about this game that I thought was outstanding. It was like at the end, like I had a moment where I killed these three people and took actual pleasure in it while they were like screaming and calling me a monster. It was a good moment. Worth playing just for that one moment. But yeah. But yeah, it's something I'd like to talk about in greater detail, but I can't spoil it if you ever play it. So
I like hear what you're saying, and I'm thinking to myself, like, maybe I'll play it. I mean, even Ryan thinks the story is good, but I'm not like into the game.
Yeah, it's just
you say that, and I'm like, I kind of want to just see that moment.
It has some really, really strong moments to it. It, like I said, it starts off kind of slow. It gets better. It has a lot of really emotional parts, and yeah, and by the end of it, I was really enjoying it. And then when it was over, I was like, cool. I don't know why they're making a sequel to this because it really doesn't need one, but I, whatever. I'll probably play that in like 5 years when it's cheap because I don't think I'm going to pay full price for that.
All right. Another game that's been jerked off a lot recently that you and me both played, so I can join in on this conversation. Doom 2016, or New Doom as you like to call it, came out last year and we finally both sat down and played it. And I have to say, it's actually really good. I had my, you know, reservations, but a lot of the people that are saying, no, it's actually good. They were right.
They have room to improve if they were to make a sequel to this game, which I'm sure they're going to be. I feel like we're just kind of repeating what we said last week. Shouldn't we just kind of start from where we left off?
Like, where did we didn't really say much last week other than...
Oh, we said it was a good. It was very positive. It was, yeah, it's, I know, but...
Over restating what we already said last week, it's nice to just really quickly...
Okay. All right.
I'll let you like the game, and then we
can lead the discussion. I'm just gonna make my comment. Yeah, I like the game. Right.
There you go.
So weak part to it. So yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Why are you making this difficult? This is why it's so hard to work with you. If it wasn't for all the money we're making.
Why is it always me? It's always me, isn't it? What about you?
Yeah. It is always me because I'm perfect. First off, I mean, not a lot to say. The graphics, they're not like pushing the boundary of anything. Artistic design had a lot to do with it, but the game just looks good. It looks good.
Yep.
The main actual like draw to the game is the gameplay. It's a first-person shooter where you don't have to reload. It's a first-person shooter where you're rewarded for moving towards the enemy instead of just ducking behind cover. There's not a lot of first-person shooters like that anymore. So like in that regard, this is a really nice game to play. Just for that.
Before Doom came out, I predicted that it was going to be an average game that people were going to call great because it was doing things that shooters haven't done in a really long time. And I feel like I was kind of right about that.
I think you were right, except I think this game was more than just good. I think even if there was other games still coming out to this day that had the Doom style, Doom would have stood out less, but it still would have been recognized for having a really good gameplay style. So I definitely say it's above average in that regard.
It's a good game. I just don't know if it's really going to... I don't know. I just felt like the second half of the game, after you get past the first Hell mission, it felt like the level design started to get kind of one-dimensional, and it felt like I was just going from arena to arena to arena. Now, the actual first-person shooter combat of taking on wave after wave of enemies was really fun. That was the best part of the game. And that was always entertaining, but I just kind of felt like the first half of the game had environments that had you actually exploring and going in different directions and trying to like learn the environment as you're exploring. And it felt like the second half of the game was just, nope, just keep moving forward. Okay, now kill these 400 enemies. Okay, now move forward a little bit again. Now kill these 400 enemies. Now move forward a little bit. It kind of like it lost a little bit of what it had going for it in the first half. And it was still fun. I just felt like it could have been so much better.
Yeah, I agree.
So much better.
Level design did go a little bit worse. Especially, like you said, the later levels just kind of felt like a glorified hallway almost. You know, you're just going in the same direction. Whereas, like, the earlier levels, as you said, they kind of was like a hub. You had to figure out how to get past the door or something. And you had to, like, you know, tear apart the lenses or whatever they were called. Cool. Fun. I don't think that makes this game necessarily worse because the shooting gameplay is so fun. You don't really care. But if they were to make a sequel, I feel like this is something they should fix. They probably won't, but it's definitely something they should fix in a sequel. But in regards to Doom 2016 itself, it's fine.
Yeah.
And there's definitely, and speaking of a sequel, there's definitely going to be a sequel.
It's been so long since a shooter campaign has had so many things going for it that, yeah, I'm willing to overlook those flaws. When I was playing through Doom, I'm like, man, this game is so great. It's so awesome. I love this game. And then after I completed it and kind of reflected on it over the last 2 weeks, in my head, I'm thinking, it was all right. I want more, though. I need more. Yeah. It's absolutely worth playing. I would recommend it to anyone who likes shooters. And apparently most people absolutely loved it. But I think I'd rather just go back and play the old Doom again. This was a nice thing to come out. But now, seriously, let's go back to making shooters really great again.
Yeah, I think this speaks more to me because I don't play as many shooters as you do. So to have something like this, which is more my kind of gameplay style, I like the little bit more faster paced and instead of the sit back and watch kind of thing, I guess you could say.
No, yeah.
Other first-person shooters aren't fast-paced, just they're not fast-paced in the way that Doom is fast-paced. But since you brought up the previous Dooms, I have recently played through the first Doom. Stylistically, there's a lot of similarities between the two games. The gameplay, you can't really compare the gameplay of the two. It's very obvious you're playing a Doom game. Yes. But the level design, the way you go through stages, like Doom 1 stages were a fucking maze. I found the Doom, like going through, like navigating the level of the original Doom to be the hardest part of Doom.
That was also kind of the core of the experience.
Yeah.
At least the first time you played through it, yeah.
It wasn't the monsters. It was the, where do I go now? Okay, I found the door. Oh shit, there's a shit ton of monsters there. And then the second time you go through, it's like, well, I know there's a shit ton of monsters there. And especially if you know how to provoke infighting, it's not that big of a deal. At least on the lower, on the normal difficulty.
You wanted to talk about the bosses, though.
Yeah.
You wanted me to talk about the bosses.
Bosses are a huge sore spot. You beat the last boss, right?
Yeah. On Ultraviolet.
Yeah, I think the last boss is a good boss. The other two, I felt, were really weak. You just fight them in a giant open circle, flat terrain, nothing to hide behind. You just basically circle strafe, double jump sometimes while you keep shooting at them. They have a shit ton of health.
I think I like the bosses a little more than you. The first one was definitely like that. The one with the shield, you kind of had to time your, at least on the difficulty I played on, I felt like I had to get the rhythm down. I had to make the right moves. Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like was a rhythm. But there weren't that many bosses in the game. They were just kind of there at the end to kind of make you feel like you're killing something significant and make you go fuck yeah after you kill him.
I kind of get the impression that the bosses were just put in there to be like a milestone, to be like, okay, this is the end of the game because we're throwing a boss at you, that way you know it's the end of the game.
And it's odd that they were all right at the end of the game. There was none in like the earlier parts,
right?
I actually kind of like that because that was something that gave the later parts of the game a little more flavor.
Yeah,
because it kind of needed that.
I just wish they were more fun.
Yeah, like that sequel can improve.
Hopefully.
Did you ever play with the snap map?
I did.
I did too. What did you think? Oh, you actually tried making a map, didn't
you?
Yeah. I just played a couple levels.
I played a couple snap map levels. Some people have done some really cool shit with that. But the limitations that they decided to put on Snapchat are really fucking dumb and kind of ruin what good experience it could be.
Yeah, what I felt, I played a good 3 or 4 levels and thought the whole time, like, yeah, neat. People can be creative with this. This is also really fucking boring and kind of annoying. I don't want to do this. It's like I'm playing just really shitty map packs for this game.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the original Doom mods had some amazing things, and compared to Like this,
but I think it's like nothing on the creators. It's just like they fucking gutted Snap.
Yeah, I know. The Time Splitters map creators were like the pinnacle of first-person shooter map editors in my mind, and I made some amazing things with those, and it just blows the new Doom out of the water. And there hasn't been anything like that in shooters in over a decade, so it's kind of cool that they tried to do that with a new Doom, but I just don't feel compelled to play these levels. I don't care enough to. I'd rather just play the campaign over again if I'm going to play this game at all any more further.
Yeah, I remember beating the game, and I'm just like, oh man, this is so fun. I want to go into Snap Map, be like, check out all these other cool stages and have the same great fun experience. Maybe somebody made a level that's just fucking balls to the walls, shit ton of enemies and shit ton of ammo, and it's just crazy. And then I get in there and it's like, you can have two guns, bro. And I'm like, nothing at all like the base game. And that's what's fun about the base game is the fucking gameplay. And then they gut the gameplay when you go into Snap Map and you're like, why the fuck do I want to be playing this? I should just go play the arcade mode that they fucking added, which the arcade mode is fun. And it's like, fuck you for totally destroying something that could have made this game's longevity fucking amazing. But no, you had to screw it. Fuck you guys. Jesus, that pisses me off.
I don't think the art
brings down the game in my mind, too, a shit ton.
I don't think the art assets and like the corridors that you can place down in the Snap Map are good at all, because everything just looks the fucking same. Like, the environments look really fucking boring and bland, and half the levels I played, even like the higher voted ones, I couldn't figure out where the fuck I was supposed to go, because everything just looked the same, and it seemed like it would have been really challenging to try to design a level in a way where it makes sense to the player going through it the first time. And that's kind of what threw me off of it, is like, I just don't care enough to wrestle with some of these levels to figure out what the fuck that the creator wanted me to do here. Yeah, I didn't play with it a whole lot. I spent maybe like a good 45 minutes just playing different levels, but I felt like after that, I was like, nah, this is a waste of time.
I mean, you complain about the single-player campaign, and it's a valid complaint, and I agree with it. It just feels like you go around the map from arena to arena, and then you go into Snap Map, and that is literally all Snap Map is, because that's all you can fucking do in Snap Map, is just make an arena. Like, there's some great, like, people have done some really cool stuff with it. The system works, and it's just like, I'd really love to play this map if it wasn't limited. The person who did this could have just fucking gone balls to the walls with this and made something amazing, but it didn't want them to do that.
I made an effort to play the highest rated maps that they have, because I wanted to see the absolute best that the community could make with these assets, and like, one of them was the remake of one of the first levels from the original Doom, and playing through it, like, okay, where the fuck am I? Where am I going? What's this supposed to be? Is this the big room with the lava? I can't fucking tell. Is this, what's this over here? Am I supposed to find a key? I can't, wait, did I already go down this way? Fucking, that's kind of where it threw me off. And like, if I was playing the original Doom, this would all be really fucking straightforward and simple to understand. And then there was like another one I played where there was like a fucking 5-minute intro. Like, you're in a fucking room and there's like written dialogue playing out by whoever fucking created this. And you have to like interact with a bunch of objects before the fucking gate opens up. And it was presented in a way where it's like you're going through a portal to hell to go put down a bunch of these fucking beacons or something. And they try to be all cinematic in the beginning. And I was like, this is awesome. They made a map editor that allows people to make unskippable cutscenes. Brilliant. So then after that concluded, once you go through the portal and the actual game portion begins, I was like, okay, so I move forward and put 10 of these things down and then spend a couple seconds trying to figure out where the fuck am I supposed to go next. I'm good. Thank you. I'll stick to the original Doom for user-created content.
Definitely. One other thing I want to talk about that they added that's kind of, I think it has sort of had some mixed opinion. Glory kills. I hear a lot of people like praising glory kills and how it creates like this chain of combat where you're cycling, you know, you want to go up and get them to get your health back and all that stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, but they're really boring. Like, the animations are great, don't get me wrong. It's just I feel glory kills get really repetitive, and they slow down the fast gameplay, and I'd rather just shoot things to death.
Especially when you're replaying the earlier levels, where you just have tons of small enemies that you have to do that for over and over again. And when you keep dying, like, when you have trouble in an area and you have to keep starting over, it does get kind of old having to glory kill the same couple enemies over and over again to get back to where you were. But I felt like, at least on the difficulty I was playing, it got so frantic and intense, I didn't have time to glory kill a lot of enemies, and I wanted to so bad that every time I did, it still felt good because I needed to so badly. That's actually probably the biggest reason why I advise playing it on the harder difficulties, because then otherwise, yeah, if the game is too easy on you, then yeah, it gets really fucking repetitive.
Especially some demons, like the Kakko demons, they have like one or two glory kill animations.
Yeah.
Every time you see it, it's kind of one of the longer ones too, and it's just like, man, it's the pace of the combat that makes Doom a lot of fun.
Yeah.
When you slow it down with those glory kills, yes, it only lasts a couple seconds, but you can feel it drag, in my opinion. Especially since you're not shooting the guy. And I think that's the high point of this game. The guns and the weapon mods are the best part. I want to use this really cool weapon you gave me, but I have to go punch the guy, get health back.
I mean, when I'm more thinking about the second half of Doom, it kind of felt like all of those wave-based survival games that are hip on Steam now, like Killing Floor and stuff. It felt like they just kind of made one of those into the second half of the game, except they just had you go through a corridor to get to the next segment, but they didn't actually bother designing the layout of the levels to be that challenging as you're just exploring them. So it felt like Doom kind of became almost sectioned off in a way where each portion of the gameplay was like in its own little bubble, and you just kind of went from bubble to bubble. Okay, now I'm going to explore here for a bit. Okay, now I'm going to fight these waves of enemies. Okay, now I'm going to explore a bit again. And that felt not cohesive enough. I hope the sequel will fix that.
Definitely, I agree.
I don't think I really have anything else to say other than
the only other thing to say, I can't remember what they're called, but it's a little like you get three a mission, the map objectives. It's not a big part of the gameplay, but I enjoyed them because I felt like it gave you something else to look out for and do, especially the ones where you had to kill certain monsters a certain way that required a little bit of planning. I think that was just like a little bit of enough variety for each map. Just make it a little bit different, which was a good thing in my opinion.
I stopped trying to do all that in like the last third of the game because I realized that up until that point, it was kind of killing the pace of the game for me because I'd constantly stop and look at my map and be like, okay, where's this thing? I need to find this thing. I would spend minutes on end just looking for like a secret in one area to try to get somewhere. And I kind of chugged through the whole game up to a certain point doing that, realizing that this would be a lot more fun if I just stopped giving a fuck and would just go through the level wasting everything. So that's what I sort of ended up doing. I missed a lot of secrets towards the end, but it made the game more fun. But yeah, they're there if you want that. The game is absolutely loaded with collectibles and side challenges if you want to go that step further.
Most of the secrets weren't too hard to find.
Most of them weren't.
There were a handful that were like, fuck it, I'm looking at a goddamn guide. Because fuck it.
After I spent enough time on them, I was just like, fuck it, out of spite, and just completely ignored them. At least that's how I was the further I got into the game and realized that I wasn't even using my upgrade points and I didn't really need them that bad, I kind of just stopped searching for them. I don't think there's a whole lot more, if anything, I need to say about this game. I just think it's a welcome change of pace. It's definitely fucking better than Doom 3. People who hate the new Doom trying to argue that Doom 3 was superior, and there's no fucking way in hell you could be that delusional. Doom 3 was a flaming pile of trash.
I never played it, so
feel free to keep never playing it. I can't believe people... I'm sorry, just no. But the first two Dooms, yeah, those are still continue to be the iconic Dooms, and there's no way you could really convince me that this new Doom holds anything over them, other than it just feels like kind of a faithful, spiritual nod to those games, for the most part.
Doom 2016, great game. Not a one-to-one comparison to the old Doom. Still go out and play the old Dooms if you haven't. But overall, 2016, great game. I liked it. And we can put a knife in that.
That was our audio feature for Doom.
Pretty much. All right, so we have one last game. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to say, yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Don't you want to...
I'm going to take off my headset, and you can just splice those comments.
No. I need you to engage me in conversation. That's what makes podcasts interesting. I don't want it spoiled. I'm not going to spoil anything specific. I'm just going to get you amped up to want to see
all
it.
Right.
Like I said, we'll talk spoilers later. But
so you're just like a chick that's going to tease my dick through my jeans, get me all hard, and then be like, okay, see you later.
Yep.
Fuck you. All right. Resident Evil 7.
I want to.
Ryan played it. Yeah. Now romance me with this, Ryan. I mean, give it to me.
Okay, I'm trying to say what I want to say first of all without being a complete dick about it, because it is so goddamn rare that I'm ever completely, fully in love with a game to the point where the flaws that exist are so minimal to me that I just don't care. And when I keep hearing people bring him up over and over again, I just go, yeah, so.
Like the load times in Bloodborne.
Like usually I'm the one speaking to those people going, why don't you care about this problem? Why don't you care about this problem? And Resident Evil 7 does have, you know, arguable problems with it. But the game is so goddamn fucking good. It's so rare that I feel this way about it. So I'm just going to say what I want to say about this game. And if you think I'm a piece of shit, then you can think I'm a piece of shit, because I probably think you're a piece of shit too. In fact, I think most of the people who hate this new Resident Evil were people who just had their fucking dicks in a fucking box for Resident Evil 4 and Dead Space, because for some reason they keep quoting those two games as if those are like the iconic survival horror experience. And I like both those games.
Noticed a lot with Resident Evil 7 and the player haters, pretty much. They wanted either Resident Evil 2 or Resident Evil 4. They're not getting that, and they're super upset.
Oh, no, I got Resident Evil 2 in this game. I got everything I loved about Resident Evil 2 in this game. Like, I think Resident Evil 2 is still a better game than it. I'll get into that, but I'm saying, like, the over-the-shoulder, third-person shooter, stab this thing, shoot him in the head, stab this thing, shoot him in the head, stab this thing, shoot him in the head, okay, move forward, style Resident Evil 4 is what people wanted, and I just never really cared for it. I didn't really care for the B-movie horror style. I know you did. I know a lot of people did. A lot of people call Resident Evil 4 the greatest of the series, but to me, that's kind of where Resident Evil started to go in the direction I didn't care for. And then 5 was where it really went the direction I didn't care for. And then when the day Resident Evil 6 got announced was the day I said, yep, I'm done. I don't care. The series is beyond saving. They can do whatever they want with it. I don't care. It's gone so far up its own ass. I'm done. I'm washing my hands clean. I'm not going to call myself a Resident Evil fan. I just don't give a fuck anymore.
So what you said, Resident Evil 4, I don't think it's the best one of the series, but I almost think it's...
Well, isn't it the only one you've played?
Yeah, it is the only one.
Yeah.
But it's not even like a part of the rest of the series, because I can recognize having just played that one. It's so different.
Yeah.
It's like you said, it's a B horror movie, and I enjoyed it because I like B horror movies.
Like, I'll just categorize real quick. I was going to do this at the end, but, you know, my favorite was Resident Evil 2. The first one was a close runner-up. I liked Resident Evil 3 a lot, too. I don't know why people kind of throw that game under the bus. It was just more of Resident Evil 2 at that point, where Resident Evil 2 already kind of established its greatness. I didn't care a whole lot for Code Veronica. And like I said, I thought Resident Evil 4 was pretty good. I didn't like 5, and I refused to play 6 because fuck 6. I also never played the remake of the first one, which I hear a lot of people saying is like the best, and I don't doubt that. And then I never played 0, and then there were a lot of spinoffs I never played. I did play Umbrella Chronicles for what that's worth, but yeah, I didn't play Revelations 1 or 2, which are kind of the throwbacks to 4, I think. So right there, I skipped on those because I just didn't really care. So with that said, Resident Evil 7 is everything I wanted from a Resident Evil game and more. It is to me what Bloodborne probably was to you in terms of what kind of effect it had on me. The moment the first trailer for Resident Evil 6 was revealed, I was done with the franchise. I never expected Capcom would ever do anything with it ever again that would bring me back on board. I was over and out with it. Resident Evil 7 is possibly the greatest redemption of a video game IP I have ever seen. And I'm not only willing to call myself a Resident Evil fan again, I'm also starting to feel hope for Capcom again. As misplaced as that may be, that is how much I love Resident Evil 7.
It's kind of crazy how they just did all the Mega Man shit, Resident Evil 5 and 6, the fucking shitty Street Fighter launch last year.
The rebuttal is that, well, they were just bandwagoning on a trend of first-person horror games. That's something I'll get to later. Yes, they did kind of do that, but I feel like they did in a way that is respectable, but I'll get into that. So,
really quick counterpoint I want to make to that. At least when it comes to video game developers, I don't give a shit if you bandwagon onto something if you make it so fucking good that you stand out.
They did.
And at that point, why should you care if they're bandwagoning? You have a really fucking good game and a popular genre. Get the fuck over yourself. Sometimes it's good to just have a really good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The gameplay has two main components to it. The first is exploring, solving puzzles, looking for keys, ammo, and health, examining your surroundings, following clues, and piecing things together with your brain, all while constantly watching your back. The other component is the enemy encounters, where in a traditional survival horror fashion, you have to decide whether to run away, hide, or attack. Sometimes these two components blend together, where you're exploring an area while being chased by something menacing, just like in all those recent horror games inspired by Amnesia. But because this game has actual combat to it, it gives you an actual sense of control, you know? Like we've been asking from these games for years, you have fight or flight moments.
In regards to that, I agree. That's something that I really wanted from these games. I did play the first Amnesia, and that I know there's like a few other games that came before it, but Amnesia is definitely the one that set the trend. It was definitely the one that became very popular for good reason, because that game was fucking scary. But the problem with that game that became apparent to me by the end of it is, as you said, there is no fight or flight. It's just flight. That's the only obvious choice.
That's all horror's been for a long time.
Right. So when you had, God, what was the follow-up game to that that we liked?
Soma.
So, yeah. So like Soma had the same thing. You see a monster, you just know to hide. And it's not scary anymore because you know that's what you're supposed to do. PT didn't have that because PT never gave you the option to run and never gave you the option to hide. So PT kind of circumnavigated it that way while still avoiding combat. Outlast was fucking retarded. The big naked guy just ran away. Oh my God. I'm so startled.
That internal struggle of, do I fight? Do I run? What do I do? Like, what if this is the wrong idea? Like, that moment of suspense and stress, that's so much of what Resident Evil used to be. So yeah, that's kind of the core of the experience of this game. At least when you're playing through it the first time, you have these dilemmas where you have a split second to decide what you're going to do. That's what I got from Resident Evil. The fear factor is well-paced. When exploring the spooky environments, I always felt nervous to some extent, sometimes a little, other times a lot, but never so intensely that it became emotionally exhausting. If you're just trying to make a walking simulator horror game and where the whole experience is just being terrified, that's fine. But if you're going to try to actually craft a game that you want me to play, you kind of have to pace it out. You have to have those cool down moments.
Yeah, in regards to that, the scary fatigue, I guess you could say, is playing Resident Evil 7 demo, playing Amnesia, playing PT, you really fucking feel that after a while where all you just, you're
dread.
You want to go on. Yeah, you dread playing the game.
Yeah.
So it's good that they know to space it out.
Yeah.
In regards to that, I do have a question. Can the end of the game still scare you?
It can, but it takes a tonal shift that feels appropriate. And this is one of the things, like one of the criticisms I'm going to address that I disagree with. Resident Evil 7 is what I would categorize as a fun type of scary. It's like the classic Resident Evil. It's monster closet jump scares that are very frightening and frequent, but it's done in a way that's thrilling. It makes you excited to keep going. It's not like, oh God, I don't want to play this anymore. The enemies are scripted in a way that the first time you encounter them, they're unpredictable, and sometimes they'll even pull off maneuvers well after you think you've already figured them out. And that said, one of the most interesting aspects to this game is how events can play out differently based on your actions. There's a sequence early in the game, like very early. It's kind of a minor spoiler, but it's early enough that I don't think it's a big deal. There's a sequence early in the game where you have to run away from Jack, the old man, by escaping through a hatch. But if you try to open the hatch while he's right behind you, he'll cut off your fucking leg and then tease you with a healing item and make you crawl across the floor to get it. This didn't happen to me till the third time I played through this early portion of the game, because I played it once with Nate when he was just showing me the game on his laptop. The second time I played it on easy mode just to see how easy was, and don't play this game on easy. That's all I'm going to fucking say. Just do not play this game on easy. But the third time when I was playing it on normal, this happened to me and it caught me totally off guard. That's just one small example. There's a short boss fight with Jack in a garage where you have to grab the keys to a car and get in. But when I played it the first time, I didn't find the keys immediately. And when I tried to get in the car, Jack grabbed me, pulled me out, and started doing donuts with the car, occasionally trying to run me over with it. The second time I played this boss fight, I got the keys immediately, got in. And now this time, I was the one driving the car, trying to run him over. Things like that. They're not apparent that this will happen the first time you're playing through the game. But once you start talking to other people who played it, they'll be like, wait, no, that happened to you? Like, yeah. Oh, this is what happened to me. And it's like, holy shit.
That's really good, because predictability can be the downfall of a scary game, especially when you're genre savvy and you can predict what happens next.
Especially when you're playing through it a second time and throws you through a loop and you're like, wait, what the fuck do I do now?
When he cuts off your leg, can you reattach it?
Yes.
Okay. How? It,
you'll see if it happens.
I can't, what?
Yeah. Yeah. A little goofy, but yeah, you'll see.
Like, is it still dead? Do you just like sew it back on and you have like a dead leg or?
Kind of. It's hard to explain.
Okay. I kind of want to make this happen now, just see what happens.
I mean, it's not as interesting as I'm probably making it sound, but it goes along with the story that is told. I noticed that there's different types of horror scenarios as you go through the game. Jack was like your typical slasher horror villain. Margaret is kind of similar at first, but then she turns into something a lot more monstrous and kind of reminded me of something more reminiscent of the type of horror from an Alien movie. The son, Lucas, was the most unique. He was kind of like Jigsaw from the Saw movies. He'd make you go through environments where he laid out traps everywhere and you had to figure out how to get through them. And then there's Evelyn, who's like your Alma Wade psychological horror trope. And yes, I know this was taken from something that has been copied to death, but it was done well, so I don't really care. Adding to that, apparently the lead writer of this game was Richard Piercy. He was actually the lead writer from Fear and Spec Ops: The Line. And it's also kind of odd because this is Capcom from Japan developing this game, and they had a Western writer writing for them, which is kind of odd. I didn't think Japanese developers likes letting Westerners have input, but they apparently did. So
yeah, that's a thing that's kind of sort of starting to change a little, like Hideo Kojima getting Del Toro kind of stuff.
It was one of the greater strengths of this game. Because
I'm surprised they didn't get the guy who wrote Ringu, though. You know, The Rain was originally Japanese.
The Rain.
It was called Ringu.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy, maybe.
I'm not familiar with the history of it. Yeah, they could have. I thought the guy they had, though, did a good job. The removal of all the characters and organizations and all the over-the-toppiness was a good thing, starting from zero, but basing it on an established universe so you could have opportunities for clever plugins and tie-ins was the right move. The cheesy, campy B-horror tone is gone in favor of a self-serious story, and the story is, in my opinion, really interesting. So that worked in the game's favor, and I prefer it. It goes hand-in-hand with the exceptionally well-depicted setting. There's a lot of great throwbacks. There's kind of a nod to the original Resident Evil. There's multiple nods. The original Resident Evil, there was a shotgun that you would pick up, and if you did that, the door behind you would close, and then you would have to find something to replace the shotgun sitting there so you can keep the doors open and walk out, and they actually had that puzzle in this game. The moment in the original Resident Evil where the Doberman jumps through the window that you're not expecting, they kind of threw a nod to that later in Resident Evil 7. That was kind of smart and kind of like, oh, I see what they did there after I screamed. there's also a magazine you find later in the game that's talking about the Raccoon City incident, which was kind of neat because the game actually doesn't have a lot of references to the older Resident Evils, but that was good that they didn't just fan service it up like crazy. I was almost expecting them to, but they didn't. The tie-ins that they had were very subtle and far and in between. And a certain character shows up at the end who may not actually be who he seems like he is at first. There is actually some debate and speculation over him potentially being someone else, but there's actually some DLC coming out later this year that's going to address that.
I do want to say I'm really glad to hear that they're taking this seriously. It's a trope that's always been around, but it's become really popular the last few years to, in the Resident Evil 4, 5, 6 style, to not take yourself seriously.
Because it's always been dumb. We don't have to try.
Yeah, and you can do it well, as in Resident Evil 4. You can do it really poorly, as in a lot of other games. I just think it's way too popular for its own good. I really hope the let's be serious and take this serious.
Yeah, it's easily one of the more divisive things about this game to the fan base, but it was a huge risk for them to try to take this game as seriously as they did and actually manage to pull it off, that I think it's applaudable. I guess I'll get into some of the cons and address some of the criticisms I've been hearing about this game. It has drawbacks compared to the early titles. Mainly, there aren't many types of smaller enemies you encounter. You'll fight mostly the same handful of enemies over and over. You don't actually start fighting tons of smaller NPCs till the second half of the game, though. And it honestly didn't bug me that much because there was enough else going on around that the enemy encounters weren't really the focus. They were just kind of a reoccurring obstacle that forced you to make a plan for how you move ahead. One of the other criticisms is how the enemies will also sometimes completely disappear when you close the door on them. But that actually only happens during a couple times in the more scripted sequences. I noticed that if you sneak through an area with a couple enemies and then go into a room and you come back out, they won't be there at first, but they'll reappear as you're walking through. So that was actually something that stayed true to the original Resident Evils, because in those games, if you didn't kill an enemy, they'd stay there until you came back. There's been criticisms about the environments being too small, but I disagree with that because every room in this game has so much density to it and detail compared to the older games in the series. You're going to be crouching and crawling around, looking in every nook and cranny for every possible thing you can find. There's a couple areas of the game that are really straightforward and linear, specifically the final act, but I didn't have a problem like some people did, because to me it was past the point of the game to be rummaging and exploring. It was now the point in the game where you got to take everything you stocked up on and go on a mission to go fuck shit up.
You want a scary game to be a big area anyway, or the area is just really small. PT is a fucking hallway. It's like, it's one of the best horror games ever.
Claustrophobic and contained. Yeah, that's what this game did.
And not only that, you gain familiarity with a small area, which is like very useful in a makes shit scarier, whereas if you're in the generic big open area, it's like, who cares?
I think Resident Evil 7 is the most atmospheric and frightening Resident Evil they've ever made. It tells the best story in the franchise. They went for small, contained, and intimate instead of large, bombastic, and epic. And that, again, in my opinion, is when Resident Evil is at its best. I'll always remember the Baker household vividly because of how distinctive and real it felt. It didn't feel like a generic game environment most of the time. Naturally, debris blocking certain areas later in the game kind of changed that. But I dare say the approach to Resident Evil 7 was quality over quantity, and that's exactly what kind of approach this series badly needed. Okay, so some of the other cons. There's what I'm now going to call the limbo effect in reference to what people hated about the original Limbo. Certain areas equal death if you aren't prepared for what you're walking into, and you usually learn that the hard way, specifically the basement the first time you go in there. But that's just something that I remembered from the original Resident Evils. You trial and error it sometimes, and that doesn't make the game bad to me. If it does to some people, fine. The boss fights are actually underwhelming. I think it's on par with the Resident Evil series, because most of the bosses in Resident Evil have always just been bullet sponges. But there is one boss in this game that will probably be remembered for years to come based on how frightening of a boss encounter it actually is. I can't think of any bosses off the top of my head that were just straight up terrifying. I actually think the boss fights in most survival horror games I can think of, even like Silent Hill, are actually the weakest parts of them, because it's, oh, here's a giant fucking slug, spider, snake thing. I just got to shoot it till it dies. But there is a boss fight in this game that playing through it is actually legitimately fucking terrifying. And every time I fucked it up and died, I would get stressed out over having to start it over again. No spoilers. You'll experience that yourself.
Yeah, I can't think of any horror game that had a boss that was actually...
If you've played this game, you know what I'm talking about. You could also say it's not a good boss fight, its programming was very predictable or something, but the first time you go up against it, you have no idea what the hell it's going to do, and good lord, it gave me the fucking creeps every time I had to start over and fight it again until I had learned exactly what it was going to do when. It always scared the hell out of me whenever it did anything. But the game is very short. Resident Evil, I think, has always been short, but Resident Evil 7 also doesn't have a whole lot of content to it compared to older Resident Evils. Like Resident Evil 1, 2, I don't remember 3. There was always two different campaigns, different difficulties, things that would be different every time you played through it based on like what options you went in with. There's going to be DLC for this, and I love the game enough that I'd be interested to play the DLC if it's good. But as it stands right now, there's just not a whole lot to it other than the Madhouse difficulty, which is just the really hard difficulty mode that you have to unlock by playing through the game once, unless you pre-ordered it. A lot of people have been claiming that this game copied ideas from... like, just a lot of horror tropes, specifically, that copied things from Fear.
Who cares?
Like, rednecks being the bad guys and stuff. It's just like, it goes back to the whole stolen versus inspired debate. And again, like, this game, it implemented everything it was inspired by so well that I really don't give a shit if you think it was copied. I played all these things it copied, in quotes, and I still enjoyed this game. So, fuck me. I guess some people can't.
Also, nothing's fucking original. It's copied, quote unquote, from something else. Even... goddamn Undertale. Ooh, it's so original. No, it's not. Fuck you. Just existing, you're inspired by something. Jesus Christ, people. Shut the fuck up.
Like, specifically, I heard a lot of people saying how this game stole a lot of things from Outlast. But the thing is, like, Outlast fucking sucks. I'm sorry. Like, when I'm playing through this game, like, before I thought Outlast was just kind of this laughably dull game. But after playing Resident Evil 7, like, Outlast is fucking shit. It's dog shit compared to this. What about Outlast was good? What about Outlast was scary compared to Resident Evil 7? If you're going to tell me Resident Evil 7 was a bad game, but Outlast was fucking good, what the fuck?
The only way that could be true is if Outlast is the first scary game you ever play. Because the first scary game you ever play is the scariest. First scary game I ever played that I can remember off the top of my head is for the PlayStation 2. I've talked about it before. I can never remember the fucking name. I always want to say Biohazard.
Like, it kind of goes back to what I was saying, how I think a lot of people who picked up on the series, a lot of diehard Resident Evil fans are people who probably started at 4 and considered that to be good. I've read debates where people are saying, you're not supposed to kill all the enemies, you're supposed to run past them some of the times. And then people will be like, well, that's a shitty gameplay mechanic. Be like, but that's the core of what Resident Evil was. Like, well, yeah, but it was still shitty even back then. Like, you never fucking played those games, did you? Stop lying. Like, fucking goddamn. This whole idea of evasion instead of combat. Have you idiots ever actually played a survival horror? You know, like, where the goal is to fucking... you're supposed to survive, not fucking kill everything. Like, it's starting to make me resent Resident Evil 4 because of these people, and even Dead Space, because people keep using Dead Space as an example. Like, you fucking kill everything in those games, and that doesn't mean that's how survival horrors are supposed to be. I don't understand why people are perceiving these games as the pinnacle of the fucking genre. They're more like third-person shooters. They're still great games, but survival horror is Resident Evil 1 through 3. That's what I consider survival horror to be. Agree to disagree.
Extermination was the first scary game I ever played. PlayStation 2 game. And that was part of it, was you would run past shit. And I haven't played the first three Resident Evil games, but I think Extermination might be the most true-to-form 3D Resident Evil game based off 1, 2, and 3. Because, like, you run past shit because you don't have a lot of healing items. And you have two health bars. You have an infection meter and your health bar. And you could get really fucked up. And the infection bar especially is, like, really hard to heal. And just... that game is fucking scary, because it's so intense, because you're walking through a blizzard outside, you can't see shit, and you know there's these dog enemies, and you know the flamethrower is really fucking good against them, but you're running low on flamethrower for you, so it's like, I don't want to see another dog. No more dogs. And you're just, like, stressed out, and then when you see that dog jump at you, you freak the fuck out, and then you're running through a blizzard, terrified, because you can't fight the thing, and then you die. That's survival horror. And sometimes not killing everything, just because it's not what you're used to, doesn't mean it's bad.
Sometimes being caught off guard and dying because of it is part of it, too.
Yeah, it's...
Sometimes you'll get yourself out of those situations, and that's what feels really good about these games. Even in Resident Evil 7, there were times where I would turn around and a fucking enemy would be coming through the doorway after me, and I'd be like, oh, fucking shit. And instead of getting pinned down, I found a way to escape. Those moments of like, oh, man, relief. That's part of it. Not just, I stabbed it in the right spot, I shot it in the right spot, I used X amount of ammo, I'm good, moving on.
I just think there's a certain demographic of players that think that they should never lose at video games.
You don't say.
Yeah. I think their opinion should be ignored.
I feel like I'm spurging a little too hard. For the most part, it's being jerked off really fucking hard. It's got tons of 10 out of 10 reviews. I wouldn't go that far. I would probably give the game an 8 out of 10. But it's just the fact that it's a return to form in a way that I didn't see coming. I had no hope for. I was kind of with most people when they thought this was just going to be a bandwagon-y game that was going to just take influences from other things but not really do anything original. But it managed to actually retain what I loved about Resident Evil 1 through 3 so much. I felt like I was playing a sequel to Resident Evil 3, if not the first Resident Evil. I never thought Resident Evil would be like this again. And it's a trend to make terrifying first-person horrors, but they didn't phone it in. There's undeniably aspects of the game that they could have developed further, like, you know, more enemy variety. But as it is, Resident Evil 7 is an excellent return to form, a perfect launching pad for future games in this style. I think the most underappreciated aspect of Resident Evil 7 is how they could have totally justified just calling this game Resident Evil, rebooting it completely, dismissed all the criticisms it would have gotten by saying, this is just a whole new series now, too bad. But instead, they chose to number it, number 7, and in doing so, they're saying that it's worthy of measuring up to the most iconic mainline games of the series, and that they're not afraid to put in that effort to make it do so. I mentioned my personal history with the series. My personal favorite from best to last, it would go 2, 1, 3, 4, Code Veronica, 5, and that's all I played. I would probably put Resident Evil 7 below Resident Evil 1, putting it number 3, my third favorite, if not my second favorite. But the way that I will ultimately know for sure is when I go back to this game someday, replay it again, and really decide if it's like something that's fun to go back to and replay, because Resident Evil 2 was something I replayed multiple times. That's my biggest consideration in all the praise I'm giving it, is what if Resident Evil 7 isn't nearly as good the second time around because I've already experienced everything. I think it will still be good because it's still like a matter of, okay, I've played this all before, I know what to do, can I master this game now? There's that element to it that, again, goes as far back to the original Resident Evil. This is a Resident Evil game. This is what Resident Evil should be. And I fucking love it. There's a Zelda and a Mario game coming out this year. Otherwise, I would say this is probably going to be my game of the year. It's a really fucking good game. You need to play it.
I do want to play it. So I take it you're done talking about Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
2 points. I kind of... It's some, like, when I was younger, like, I always thought, like, games need to be long. Like, I want a good length from a game, and needs replayability and all some of that. Now, like, as an adult, I'm like, I don't care if it's like 2 hours long and I could never play it ever again. Just as long as it's a really good 2 hours. Does that shit really fucking matter?
I will take the 7 hours, I think it was, it clocked me in it, of this game over the 2 hours of Outlast. I don't know. I really... Resident Evil 6, I think, was like a 30-hour game. I'm not even going to touch that. I would have maybe tried to play through it, but knowing I'm probably not going to like that game and then hearing about how fucking long it is, it's like, why would you do that?
I have no idea. I think I'd want to do it just because it's multiplayer, but at the same time, it's like 30 hours. That's a bit much.
My understanding is each campaign was about 10 hours. It may vary, but that's what I heard when it came out. This game, I felt like, in a way, like because they ditched the whole campy B-horror movie style to it, it almost had more of a soul to it. I've read criticism saying that the characters are paper thin and unrememberable. It's like I connected a lot more with the characters in this game than I ever did with Jill or Chris. Because Jill and Chris were just kind of like action hero archetypes that, yeah, you know, you're surviving with him in a fucked up situation, but I feel like I'm just kind of playing a regular guy going through a fucked up situation. And the Bakers and how they came to be actually becomes really interesting and gripping in a way that Resident Evil has never been. It felt more personal and, like I said, intimate. It's just not something I ever expected from Resident Evil, and it raised the bar for this series in a way that I didn't see coming. In a lot of ways, how people are saying Doom is a much-needed shake-up for the first-person shooter series, that's what Resident Evil 7 is. Like, this is a kind of survival horror that has not been around in fucking well over a decade. I cannot remember the last game like this that felt this way, except for maybe, like, the original Silent Hills or the original Resident Evils. It's such a breath of fresh air. It is such a throwback. It was such a jerking-off experience to me playing through it. I'm like, my God, I never thought I'd be here again, but I'm playing one of these games again. It's what I wanted, and I didn't even know I wanted it in this style in first person, but they utilized it so well that I am more than willing to see them continue to go further with it. I hope they add more enemy types and deepen the combat, and in the future, I'll probably be able to look back on this and kind of criticize its flaws better, but right now I'm just on such a high from how much I love this game that once you play through it, we can talk about it in greater detail.
Sounds great.
Especially the story beats.
So, do you got any news?
All right. I got a couple short little things I could throw out. Well, my favorite thing is that Time Splitters Rewind officially has a release date. Well, they released a teaser trailer that showed 2018, but apparently they're saying the game will come out this year. And this teaser trailer is kind of awful because all it is 2 minutes of showing green crystals floating around the screen before the title shows up with like music from the originals playing. But I think they just made this as a means to announce that the game is finally coming out soon. And I'm excited because I love Time Splitters. That's all I have to say about that. Okay, here's one for you. Let it sink in. Netflix has announced a Castlevania TV show for 2017. The game series, Castlevania.
Okay, nope.
I don't expect it to be good, but I'm just telling you this Netflix because you'll... Netflix
has good things, but they've done kind of disappointing things.
This is really bizarre because it's like, did Konami just say, fuck it, we don't make games anymore here. You guys want to make a TV show? Why not? Maybe make people care about this franchise and we'll try making a game again in the future.
So bizarre to me. I'll watch it. I have Netflix, so I'll watch it. But Jesus Christ, that's so bizarre to me.
It is being developed by Frederator Networks from Adventure Time and producer Eddie Schenker.
Is it animated or live action?
I don't know. Who was behind that gritty Power Rangers short back in 2015 on an episode of Nick Animation Podcast late last year. Cyber said the Frederator was ramping up on an unnamed video game project, his words as per slash film transcript. We have a project right now that we're doing that needs to go unnamed based on one of the most world famous video games of the last 30 years that we've had in our shop for 12 years without being able to get it started, but there were great characters and a great story, and eventually we got it going. All right. I don't know. Just telling you this. I have no interest in this, but you can follow this if you want.
Interesting television shows. Samurai Jack's getting a new season.
Yeah. Never watched it.
No.
Yeah, I know.
Why are you this way?
Ask my parents. They may be this way.
Watch Samurai Jack if you can.
Okay.
Good.
Next story. This is just to conclude something we've brought up in the past. I don't care to go into the detail of this, but I'm just going to throw it out. ZeniMax awarded $500 million in the case against Oculus. They won the lawsuit.
Oh, nice.
Oculus lost.
Fuck Oculus.
I don't care enough to go into the details, but that's just something we discussed in the past to put a cork on. All right, two last things. Nintendo Switch Online services may cost less than $30 a year. This was revealed to a Japanese newspaper, the Nikkei. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not going to try. The Nintendo Switch services will cost between 2,000 and 3,000 yen annually. That works out to be about $1,760 and $2,655 in US dollars. So that's half the price of PSN and Xbox Live, but who's to say what services that's actually going to entail? But there you go. All right, so here's probably the most likely news story we can have a discussion about. This is a real punch in the gut for me. It maybe will be for you. You didn't finish the game this is about, but I did and was looking forward to the next one. The Deus Ex franchise has been put on ice by Square Enix due to poor sales of Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
Fucking shot yourself in the foot there, didn't you guys? Fucking cliffhanger nowhere ending bullshit.
Yeah, they really did. They really did. I'm now pissed off because that whole game was a setup for the next one, and now there's not going to be a next one, at least not for a really fucking long time.
Maybe setting your game up like that is part of the reason why it didn't sell that good, because you got kind of poor reviews.
Apparently, from what I read, is that the reason it ended on so many cliffhangers was because the game was originally going to have a lot more to it, but they had to make a bunch of cuts to realistically make the game finishable. And in doing so, they took so long to get around to that, and then fucked up the whole marketing with all the pre-order DLC that pissed everybody off, that when the game came out, no one really wanted to give the game a chance. And then, it, you know, it got good scores, but not spectacular enough that made people want to drop everything and run to the game. And yeah, I liked that game, but now I dislike the game because it's like, where's the game that's supposed to follow it up that I was excited for because of this game? It just led me to nowhere.
Yeah.
It took them 5 years between Human Revolution to Mankind Divided, and I thought, well, surely they're going to make the next sequel within 3 years, hopefully sooner than that. They wouldn't just leave us hanging for a long time. That would be really douchey. That branch of Eidos Montreal is now working on a Guardians of the Galaxy project for Marvel, because Square Enix apparently just announced this big partnership with Marvel, so they're going to be publishing Marvel games. So bye-bye, Deus Ex, for the foreseeable future. I'm sad. Are you sad?
Yeah, a little bit.
Are you ever going to finish Mankind Divided now?
Maybe if they announce another Deus Ex project. Yeah, probably.
I mean, my fear now is by the time they announce a new one, it's not even going to follow up Mankind Divided. They might just go in a whole fucking new direction. And now they've already established so much for Adam Jensen and this plotline they're going with. If they don't finish it up, I'm going to be pissed off.
That is really frustrating to a large degree.
Like, there was, I haven't played any of the DLC for Mankind Divided. I don't know if they tie anything up in those. It didn't look like they did. I heard the DLC was really disappointing. But, either way, boo.
Fuck you. I just want to email Square Enix and just be like, just the subject line, fuck, and then body, you.
I'm going with Capcom. They know how to treat women.
I'm not ready to commit with Capcom.
Yeah, yet. Neither am I.
If they come back with like a Mega Man game or something, yeah. You know.
Hey, my whole dick sucking earlier was the fact that maybe they will. Maybe they've turned a new leaf. Maybe all the fuckery they've done has finally gotten through to somebody there and said, hey, we used to be something, man. What happened to us? We got to go back. We got to make things whole again. Maybe that's happening. We'll see. I'm kind of worried that the DLC for Resident Evil 7 is going to be shit, because usually single-player DLCs for games like this are never good. But they have an opportunity to be good. I'm just going to hold on to that.
Capcom is one more good game away from me sucking their dick. That's pretty much all it is. And I'm not counting Street Fighter, because I really don't care that much for fighting games. One more good game that I actually want to play. If they can do that, I will 180 on Capcom, be like, Capcom's a great game dev. Throwing that out there, Capcom. Konami, also, you know, you can redeem yourself with two. I'm going to say all developers, like EA, Capcom, Konami, if you can do two really good games that I like in a row, I will like you again for all that's worth.
There is something we haven't had in a long time, hope. Usually that backfires, so let's just hold on to the good time while we can. Did I make a good case for Resident Evil 7?
Yeah.
I felt like I just kind of gushed about it. I talked a lot more about the negative criticisms than I intended to, but...
You kind of spoiled a little bit more than I was hoping.
Okay, well, I did my best to cover up the best parts. I'm a believer in the fact that there's always a strong opposing viewpoint to pretty much anything, or at least a strong reason to oppose something from someone's angle. And I'm a believer in always trying to find that angle, trying to find the counter-argument to everything. Usually I'm the one on the side of the counter-argument to something everyone's jerking off. But when I love something, I always get fascinated and want to find out, okay, why do people hate this so much? Make me understand so I can empathize. And so far, just all the criticisms I've read of Resident Evil 7, it's like, yeah, I get it, but you're selling all the other good parts of it short. Do you not feel? I felt again. I don't feel almost ever anymore in any situation in life. So Resident Evil 7 made me feel again.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cleans. Nice.
I'm ready to wrap things up if you are.
Me too. If you've listened to this podcast or any of our podcasts for dogs. Why did I say that joke? That was a dumb joke. Whatever. Fuck it, I'm done.
Okay, I'm done too. ExplosionOfHappiness.com, iTunes, YouTube. Now go to the comment section and tell me how I'm a fucking idiot and don't have good arguments. Thank you for listening.
And until next week, goodbye. All right. That was good, I think. Kind of. I don't know. Oh, the very first part where you explain Resident Evil 7, you might want to quick... I mean, it's just you talking. You might want to quickly re-record that, because while you were recording it, it sounded like you were reading off of a notepad.
Yeah, I was worried. I did the... I went... Normally, I have time to kind of curate my notes, but they're just giant paragraphs right now, so I didn't have time to...
Yeah, so if you want to just, like, quickly reread that, the very first...
I'm going to probably just read over all these notes again and just reword things very calmly so that if I sound like a spurging idiot, I can cut that and then...
You sounded like a fucking eighth grader giving a book report. Or a fifth grader, I should say.
I know. I know I did. That's because this notepad I have is fucking massive. See, The Last of Us, I took like 5 notes and they're each like one sentence. And I was like, this is good. I need to use this format from now on.
That's the way to do it. Don't even use full sentences. Just use like keywords. So like what it is and then powerful descriptors that you want to use.
Yeah.
That way you have to fill it. That way you hit the points you want to hit, but you have to fill in the in-between yourself. It makes you sound more natural.
I'm so inexperienced at defending things I like that it's really hard. I'm much better at bulletin pointing things I hate and then ranting about them. Whatever. This whole last week, I've been reading comments like, this game is so shit. Like, why? Oh, because
I want to hate it.
The other characters are so shit. Like, you can't even, you don't know if you can even kill these things at first, and you just die. And it's like, have you ever played these games before?
I remember.
I don't like.
Okay, so. In Secret of Mana, which is a great game, fucking love Secret of Mana. Secret of Mana, on the very first boss, when you die, the fucking game says shit like, it's okay to die. It's good to watch and make plans for what you're fighting. And I've always kind of had that attitude towards, like, how, I think, it's a video game. You're going to die eventually. How is that not okay?
I think the source of these arguments is the notion that survival horror games don't need tank controls and wonky controls in general to be horror. You can control a character very well and still manage to be scary by designing a game that suits that. But as I've always said in the past, I don't mind tank controls. I don't mind sluggish controls if it suits the type of environment that you're in, if it suits the type of style the game is. So like, I think a lot of people just took issue with the fact that the game is in first person. You move very slowly. It's kind of hard to shoot things because you aim in a way that's slow to respond. But like, I don't give a fuck. Like, that's the game. Go play fucking Resident Evil 6 if you want a game where you can headshot fucking everything. Goddamn. Go play Dead Space if you want the whole focus of the game to be shooting everything in the right spot. That's not what all survival horror games are. Like, oh, I think arguing for tank controls is a cop-out for lazy design. Okay. Neat. Go play Outlast. Apparently you like that. I don't know why. Like, a lot of people say, like, this game ripped off Fear so much. Like, what do you think Fear was inspired by? Japanese psychological horror films. So Fear is a ripoff of all those. Can we hate Fear now, too? Like, fucking goddamn. Just fuck. Resident Evil 7 also took a lot of influence from, like, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Any good way. So why the fuck would you hate it? Fuck. Fuck. I think I'm done.
Yep.